Carolyn Ellendorfer, 1904 Milfern Drive, Southeast Mill Creek, Washington. I'm here for a number of quick things. First of all, on behalf of myself and my friends, I want to welcome Rebecca as our city manager. We're very pleased you're here. And I want to thank the council for using your wisdom to hire Rebecca. And we're looking forward to great work between council, staff, and looking forward to good things. I know you can do it. I want to thank Landy for the work that you've done for the city. Really appreciate it. I remember being on the library board several years ago, and one of your staffing positions was to work with us at that point. You always were there with a smile. Really appreciate all you've done. So thanks, and have fun on permanent vacation and your next journey. I also wanted to speak in support of the city manager's proposal tonight for the ILA with the Snohomish Regional Drug Task Force. For 20 years, I either created or managed programs that focused on the prevention of substance abuse and violence, and frequently worked with members of the Regional Drug Task Force. They are an outstanding group, and I really feel that it's a very good investment by the council, approving this contract as proposed in the information with the agenda. They will provide a really good resource and support for Chief Crannell and his officers that will lead to the continuing and enhancing of the quality of life in Mill Creek. So please consider voting for yes. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Any topic at all? Going once, twice? We'll have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. So first up on our, I guess, old business is East Gateway zoning options. Rebecca?
Thank you, Mayor. And with the council's permission, we're going to tag team this a little bit tonight. And Mr. Rogers would be working the technology portion of the presentation, and I'll speak from here if that's all right with the council. So on my literally second day in Mill Creek, I attended my first council meeting. And one of the items on the agenda was really the council's desire to discuss the East Gateway Urban Village and the future of that master plan and that development. And it was my understanding from that meeting that the council had prior discussions and was struggling with how best to proceed in determining future land use uses in that area. And we had talked about at that meeting, staff coming back to you at the June 23rd meeting to provide the council with some suggestions and how to move forward and reach some decisions. And so this presentation tonight is a follow-up, as we promised at the June 2nd meeting. So again, realizing that I literally kind of ran into this particular project my second day here in Mill Creek, I needed to start with some background and research really what the issues were, because you have to understand the background, right, in order to forge a path forward to recommend some solutions for you. So went back to the 2008 original plan. As all of you certainly know by now, that original plan as adopted created the mixed-use development concept. And set some limitations in terms of square footage, minimum requirements in terms of residential units, and as well had the spine road component.
And that was an important component throughout the entire project. And in 2010, I found in doing the research the 2010 review by an advisory committee. And the advisory committee was facilitated by Bill Trim, who, as I understand it, was a retired community development director here. And so he was brought back in a consulting basis and facilitated this. And going through some of the documents, I think Councilmember Todd was a part of that. And so these were some of the other individuals I don't know personally, but found their names in some of the research that I did. And I thought that this particular 2010 review was really interesting to me from a historical perspective. And I took a few of the quotes from the advisory committee and some of their minutes because I do think they're relevant to the discussion tonight and the path forward. And so one of the things that I thought was interesting is one of the comments in the minutes was kind of the projection that what was going to happen is that this major anchor would come in, the retail component would move first, this neighborhood effect would be created, and then the residential component would come in. And I just find that interesting because I think that's important for two perspectives. One, there clearly was a residential neighborhood component contemplated, but it was certainly contemplated to occur second, not first. And so obviously, as you all know, that reverse happened. Another quote in the minutes that I thought was interesting is talking about 500 units of residential won't make a retail center happen, and it won't make it not happen. And so again, I think, you know, that's just important to remember as we move forward and we talk about options tonight, that understanding the residential has been a concern. I think it's important to go back and remember that it was originally in the master plan. It just was thinking it would happen in the second stage, not the first stage. You know, in your conversation on June 2nd, and I apologize, I can't remember which council member brought it up, but there was conversation about stores shrinking in size and what were footprints now and what would be really a retail space that could be expected in 2015. And I think even that was a concern back in this 2010 advisory committee discussion. And so, again, I think for our discussion tonight, that was an interesting historical note. I also think that in this quote, they talked about a park, you know, in phase one. And so as I understand it, in part of this residential development, we have this park concept created. And so I just want to point out that some of the things that were originally planned are occurring, but perhaps maybe not in the order that was originally anticipated. And again, just going back to having a concern about, well, how much retail would actually be developed as time went on. And that certainly echoes the council's concern now is how to jumpstart retail development. And then I thought this was a really important quote, and I think this gets to the genesis of a lot of your discussion is it's a healthy exercise to define what you don't want to do. And I think, you know, again, for my very limited time here in Mill Creek, I think that's a discussion you've been having. But I think that, you know, what the council hasn't been presented is the data and the information to make that decision. And so tonight, what we're hoping to give you is a plan that will give you the information to have that conversation. Again, you know, in reviewing this particular project and putting together a recommendation for the council tonight, I just started at the big picture, what I call the 50,000-foot level, looked at that comprehensive land use policy themes. And you all, of course, are very familiar with these themes when you're tenured in Mill Creek. But understanding the mixed uses character of eGov, encouraging projects with the residences or offices above retail, dense, high-quality housing, and then again that central spine road. And I go to that because I think we will have to come back to that, and that's an important decision point as you move forward. And then drilling down to kind of the next level, the city control levels, these design guideline themes. And again, the spine road really was a central part. Properties were to face it. There would be pedestrian ways. The idea is there'd be connections throughout the community. And when I started looking at the principal uses, and certainly at your June 2nd meeting, I heard some of the uses discussed and whether they were appropriate or inappropriate. As the project currently sits or whether you wanted to limit some of the uses to certain properties. And that got me thinking. And so I really tried to look at, okay, well, what were all the uses that were allowed? From my city management perspective, what I thought was interesting is that were designated uses, but they were designated for the entire project. There was no limitation set ever originally that you could that limited percentages. For example, you could have no more than a certain percentage office space or so on and so forth. Or there was no zoning identification that this amount would be retail and this amount would be housing, you know, where it was located. And so I thought that was a really important reason that you're where you are now in terms of your discussion. And well, so I had Tom kind of orient me, as again, through this research phase that I went through in the last couple of weeks, to really understand, and I understand this was just one concept, right? This wasn't, you know, set in stone, but this was one concept of how the project could look based on that overall comprehensive plan, the design, the land uses. And so, Tom, do you just want to take us through a little bit of what this concept was, maybe for some of the folks in the room who may not be as familiar with it?
Sure. When we were adopting the original plan, we were trying to figure out if the policies were met and if the design guidelines were followed, what could happen? It's a very flexible plan, as city manager said, so it didn't say exactly what would go where, but this is just one vision. So what this plan shows some of the important concepts. It has the signal at 39th and 44th, which when this was adopted, those signals weren't there at the time. It also shows the spine road connecting 39th with Seattle Hill Road eventually. It also shows the buildings being pushed up next to the spine road with the parking behind. It shows mixed-use buildings with commercial below and up to four stories of residential or office above. And it does show the standalone residential properties down here on the south side, adjacent to the existing single-family homes. And it also had a public uses, and a library was being talked about at the time. So there's a little area designated as a library, I think, right along in here. So that was the purpose of this plan right here. Okay, so the next thing is, how was that plan implemented over time since it was adopted? And we showed you this, or a version of this map, at the last meeting on June 2nd. And what this shows is the properties in red are either properties that are being developed, have been developed, or have a project in the pipeline or are vested. And the yellow ones are what's left as far as looking forward. So starting chronologically, when this area was annexed by the city, the church was already there, and it was there when we adopted the zoning. So that's the first one here. The second project that came in was the Gateway Office Building, which has 24,000 square feet of professional offices. And the yellow in the behind is, there's actually two lots that were reserved for future development, and the spine road was dedicated, which bisects those two lots. The next property that came in was Polygon. That was the property that we were talking to Target at the time when they sort of switched the game on us. And what was approved there was 2 acres, or 1.7 acres of a commercial lot, 302 dwelling units, a mixture of townhouses and apartments, and then the public park, 1.26 acres, which we just had the grand opening last, I think it was April. And then finally, the last red bordered property is the Vintage Housing proposal that's in, and that's for 200 plus senior restricted apartments above, about 15,000 square feet of retail, and we're processing that right now. It also includes them building the spine road through the middle, bisecting their property. So what does that leave going forward? Probably the largest piece in the far west is the Tenny Creek Partners piece, and that's roughly 12 acres in size. And as a comparison, that's about the size of the Mill Creek Plaza where the Albertsons is here in downtown. The Rimkin piece is approximately 2 acres, which is it's a narrower piece, but that is also still available or not spoken for. And then you have the two fairly small lots on the back of the Gateway piece. It looks bigger there than it really is because the road takes a significant part of that. It's actually fairly two small pieces. Adjacent to Seattle Hill Road is about 4 more acres that include the Dunn property and some single family homes. Dunn property is about here, and then there's some single family homes here, and that is adjacent to Seattle Hill Road. And sort of an interesting distinction, as we talked about, if you recall back in, I think it was 2012, we changed the zoning, we put a residential restriction for the areas that are west of 44th, so this blue line here, to the west of that, any residential has to be second floor or above, no more standalone residential, where the area to the east of 44th, the properties basically adjacent to Seattle Hill Road, were not given that same restriction. They could still go residential, and that the idea behind that was that property was smaller, it was further away from any commercial that was going to come by, so it would be so isolated, it probably wasn't feasible to restrict it to that.
So, again, going through the background and the history of the research, you know, it was important because I really needed, you know, just for myself to be able to try to kind of grasp, I thought, were the issues. As I said, that's pretty central to be able to come to you with a recommendation. So I think an issue, and I'm not saying it was a negative issue or a positive issue. I think it's just an issue that brought us to where you are today, is that the eGov development regulations did not structure allowed uses such that the staff had tools that could control the development in terms of they couldn't control the mix or placement of the uses, and there really weren't incentives that were built into to that original to those original development regulations. And really, it just shows that, at that time, at least as drafted, it really depended, the regulations allowed really for the market to dictate the zoning, if you will, and to control the mix of uses. So, as Tom indicated, you know, while over half of eGov development is under construction or vested, there are still 14 acres that remain west of 44th and 4 acres on the east. And while I understand the concern, and that certainly has spurred the discussion this evening over residential, I still think we can put that in the opportunity column in the sense that the original master plan contemplated that. But now the challenge is how do we balance that to ensure that balance occurs. So our task tonight was really to help the City Council review and update, if you deemed it necessary, your eGov vision and to ensure its proper implementation. So how do we achieve that? And we really have a four-phase recommendation for your consideration tonight. And I think that Councilmember Holtzclaw really kind of kickstarted, you know, the phase one recommendation in the discussion on June 2nd, talking about really determining what's economically feasible, if you will, on the vacant property. And that goes to kind of several underlying questions. You know, does the current master plan still function in today's economy? And how would a smaller anchor tenant affect the overall plan and the vision for that plan? What uses are economically realistic in eGov, and how would those identified uses financially impact the city? And I think this is the component of information that has not been made available to the council as you've actually skipped phase one and tried to get to phase two, which is your policy determination of had to select the land uses within eGov as it currently is situated that you think is appropriate for the city of Mill Creek. And you're kind of doing that in a vacuum. And so I think that the staff needs to go back and gather the data in phase one so you can execute phase two. And then from the information that is derived from that phase one, the decisions that occur in phase two, we would then identify our regulation changes necessary to bring a revised or updated vision to reality. And it would involve that infrastructure investment review. Do you still want a pedestrian-friendly spine road? You know, do you still want that town square public plaza concept? Does that work economically? There was talk about a viewing platform overlooking the wetlands. And I think this is important from the concept that in looking at the historical documents, that the retail component was originally thought that the investment from that retail component would go towards a debt service on this spine road. Well, now portions of that road have been built by developers as things have developed, but that's been in the residential component. So you still have this retail component and the cost of this spine road. And so that really begs a question of not just what kind of financial impact to the general bottom line of the city could the retail development bring, but would that retail development support the city's investment in that spine road such that you could determine if you want to make a city investment in that spine road? And then I think, you know, as with any good plan, it's execute, 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 right? And so I think part of the what was missing from the original plan is this phase four, to actually create an economic develop initiative to actively pursue potential partners to bring that vision to life and facilitate the implementation with selected partners. And I certainly, as you all know, we're not here in your town center days, but I understand that was part of the town center program at the time. So I think that's important to have a discussion about that phase as well. So what we wanted to bring to you tonight for consideration was really, would you like to begin a project to reach some definitive decisions regarding your land use in eGov? And towards that end, would you like to start that with phase one of this plan? In other words, the economic feasibility study. And that is really a question, and it's not a rhetorical question. You know, the council may feel like you have the information to jump to phase two. I think the questions for discussion purposes are, you know, do you feel that you know whether or not the current master plan still functions in today's economy? Do we understand how the development to date impacts the master plan? And do we really know which land uses are economically realistic in eGov? And I think, you know, that discussion and those questions will drive your decision on the overarching question about whether you want an economic feasibility study before you actually discuss land uses. And so with that, Mayor and Council, I'd turn it over to the Council for discussion.
So your proposal is?
My proposal is that the staff would draft a request for qualifications to conduct an economic feasibility study, that we would issue that RFQ and bring back to the council for consideration the bids that were received, the costs associated with those bids. So you would be making a decision on costs tonight, because we obviously would need those costs for you to decide on and to tell you where we would pay for that in the current budget. And then to the extent you authorize a contract with the responsible and responsive bidder, then we would go ahead and proceed with the economic feasibility study, bring that back to you for presentation, and then discussion for phase two of the land use choices.
Okay. Oh, Councilman Holtzclaw?
Thank you. This is a great presentation. I like the approach. As I said a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure I want to spend a lot of time planning of what we think we want to happen if it's not based in some reality of what could happen. The one question I have is, we talk up in the slides about updating the adopted master plan. And this is probably a question better answered by Tom.
Mm-hmm.
How is the plan, the master plan, adopted? Is it part of the comprehensive plan? So if we do any update, it's going to have to be tied to our annual comp plan update?
Perhaps it could. Right now, it's adopted to by reference in the comprehensive plan. So I would have to look to see legally whether or not maybe it changes.
I think it's that we refer to master plan here, but it's more likely that you would look at updating the development regulations. You don't need
that wouldn't be
comp plan to update the development regulations.
Right, and that wouldn't be subject to it. I just caught me when we were talking. I wasn't sure if we're actually talking about changing the plan. We may be pulling ourselves into the comp plan process.
If the council were to decide that they didn't want to have pedestrian friendly and they wanted our auto-related uses and things that were radically different than what's the adopted plan, then we probably would have to change the comprehensive plan policies.
That's right. The comprehensive plan policies have things like connecting the road from one place to another, and if you wanted to change that feel, then it would require a comp plan change.
So practically speaking, if we want to tweak the development regulations, we can do that any time. If we want to make a pretty substantial change to the master plan, like you're talking about, we wouldn't be able to do it as part of the current update. There's not enough time, and it's not within the scope of the environmental analysis. We'd probably be looking at doing that update next year.
Probably, yeah. We'd have to look at it to see whether we could either, you know, do an updated analysis and squeeze it in this year, delay the adoption a little bit to push it through, or next year. It's a once a year thing, so we could do it early next year if we needed to.
And I think, Councilmember, that timing still works for you, because I would anticipate 4 to 5 months, you know, to the RFQ, get the bids, come to council, get the work done, and then, you know, another month to plan agenda items for discussion on phase one, phase two, which would then, upon completion of that, move us into the new year for discussion on comp plan issues, design issues, development regulations.
Sure. So I guess what I'm, good presentation, I appreciate it. You're right. When we put this plan together, it was a very different economic time. And so that focus, or that group of folks that got together, that was during the time when nobody thought any more residential was going to be needed anywhere, because everybody's houses prices were dropping through the floor. And so their prediction of the retail happening first made a lot of sense. But you're right, we need to go back and reflect on what's happened differently since then. I guess the one concern I've got, the thing that's going through my head right now, is if we go out for RFQ and pick a consultant and spend some time, as you said, 3, 4, 5 months to do that. When you look at the map west of 44th, there's really only three parcels yet to be developed. And so is it a race for, can we change the plan, or do people come in with different with answers for those properties? Because all along, we felt as a council, we wanted to let the property owners have some flexibility and some say in the use of their property. We didn't want to be prescriptive and say it's got to be this or got to be that, hence the kind of flexible plan which worked in Town Center may not have worked here quite as well. So there's an expediency. How do you make decisions quickly enough to impact things?
Good.
And it sounds like I think Tom referred to as Vintage, I guess, is the name of that potential property or the potential project. And you said they have committed to, or they're coming close to committing to, or they've suggested they might do the spine road through the middle. That's, once you start sticking a road somewhere, it seems like it is kind of prescriptive on what could happen on the two things on each side of it, too. So I wonder how much flexibility we still have and what the timing is and all that.
But as my understanding, the Vintage property is vested, correct? And so, and you're absolutely correct, Councilmember Todd, that you want to be able to undertake the analysis, and you certainly want to have then that public participation as you're exploring those land uses based on the data that's derived from your phase one approach. And historically, when I've worked with other councils in this regard, what I would recommend is that you consider a moratorium while you undertake this particular review process. And so we have prepared for your consideration tonight, if you had decided you wanted to move forward with an economic feasibility analysis, two ordinances for review, both of which are moratoriums on the eGov properties that are not developed or vested, and that one is an option where it would just be a carte blanche moratorium. One is a moratorium for only developments incorporating residential components.
Do you want to discuss those in executive session?
We can certainly do that, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, so the council will now recess to executive session pursuant to RCW 4230-110I to discuss potential litigation with legal counsel. And we plan to return to session, 10 minutes?
If you want time to review the moratoriums, I can give those to you, and you can do that either in the executive session, or you can take a break before you go into executive session, read them independently. I defer to you guys on that.
I thought you were going to walk...
I can walk you through it. It just depends whether you want to read it or... I tend to not be able to comprehend everything while someone's talking.
Make it 15 minutes
read and while you're listening.
Give us a chance to read.
Minutes.
Okay.